Would you like for us to post information about your congregation on the Find a Church page of our website? We'll add your church when it becomes part of the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to donate $1,000 to Issues Etc. Please consider adding the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. to your church's mission or advertising budget. Find out more about the Issues Etc. 300 at issuesetc.org. Click support and publicize your congregation to the world.
There are two things that you do not mention in Lodge at all, ever. One is politics, the other is religion. They are items which would bring disharmony into the Lodge, and the Lodge is based on peace and harmony. Lodges are closed, peace and harmony prevailing. There is the whole concept of brotherhood is geared toward non-controversial matters.
That's Bill Mankin. He's a 32nd degree Mason in a debate with the late Dr. Walter Martin. We're going to talk about the Masonic Lodge and Freemasonry. Our guest for the remainder of this hour, live this Wednesday afternoon, Dr. Alvin Schmidt. You see them all over the place, especially when you live in the Midwest. You drive through any and every town. What do you see? You see the Masonic symbol. You see the temple. You see out on the, it used to be, out on the welcome to our town sign, the various Masonic symbols. You see men wearing the pins. You see them on the back of vehicles driving down the highway. What is Freemasonry? What is the Masonic Lodge? It's a rather complex question. Is it possible for Christians to consistently be Orthodox Christians and members of a Masonic order? Dr. Alvin Schmidt is Professor Emeritus of Sociology at Illinois College. He's co-author of the Encyclopedic Dictionary of Cults, Sects, and World Religions. Dr. Schmidt, welcome back.
Well, thank you.
How do I know if my neighbor, my coworker, my friend is a member of a Masonic Lodge?
Well, you don't necessarily see it visibly. Some of them wear a lapel badge, or you might see it on a ring, but they don't always necessarily have either one. It's common to see a lapel badge or a ring, but not necessarily. So sometimes you just have to find that out in terms of a conversation you've had with the individual, or perhaps you've seen that his name maybe appear on a list of a local lodge members that is sometimes published in local newspapers.
Some people say, you know, for all appearances, the Masonic lodges are service organizations. They're doing social good. Some of them, some branches or some chapters of Masonic orders. I think here are the Shriners do amazing philanthropist work in terms of free hospitals and whatnot. How could this possibly be something that concerns Christians?
Well, first of all, they're not really a service organization as are, for example, Rotary and Kiwanis and the Lions Club, the Optimist Club. In that sense, Masonry is not a service organization, and they have never proclaimed or presented themselves as such. They are primarily an organization that serves its own members, and even there, the emphasis is not that much on service, but on brotherhood, as you mentioned at the outset in the introduction today. Now, if you take a look at the Shrine, of course, the Shrine is a little different. The Shrine obviously emphasizes a lot of children's hospitals, and that, of course, is a major activity that they engage in terms of altruism. But and the Shrine, of course, again, our members, in order to become a member of a Shriner, you have to first be a Mason. But at the same time, we have to be careful and say that the Shrine is not Masonry. The Masons are very, very particular about that, and they're really correct. The Shrine is a fun organization, basically, that was organized in the late 1800s in the United States. And so there's a distinction between the two. But again, to go back to it, the Freemasons are not primarily your service organizations. And sometimes that's been presented, sometimes even maybe by some of their own members, but it doesn't really correspond to what they really are and what they officially say.
With only about 30 seconds here, Dr. Schmidt, what really are they?
Well, they're a fraternal organization, and the oldest fraternal organization in existence. And the emphasis is on brotherhood, to be quite right, as you mentioned at the outset. And they're an organization that has secrets. They have secret oath that they take. They're not open for public examination or attendance, for example, in their lodge meetings. You have to have signs and other kinds of recognition to be able to attend the lodge. And so and that extends, again, shows that they're very different than the service organizations.
Dr. Alvin Schmidt is our guest. We're going to talk more about the Masonic Lodge Freemasonry for the last half hour of Issues Etc. live this Wednesday afternoon, December the 1st. Your questions and comments are welcome. I know you must have many. 1-877-623-MYIE. Some people would say, well, during the generation of joiners when service organizations and things like the Lodge and other groups were in their heyday, maybe it was something Christians should be concerned about, but these are dying organizations. Better to just leave them to a slow and lingering death rather than worry too much about them now. We'll get Dr. Schmidt's response to that after this.
Here's a special offer for Issues Etc. listeners. For any size gift between now and the end of the year, we'll send you a CD of a Christmas and Epiphany sermon preached by Pastor Todd Wilkin. You can donate online, issuesetc.org. You can also donate by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio and send it to LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. And for any size year-end gift, we'll thank you with a CD of one of Todd's Christmas and Epiphany sermons.
Hey, St. Louis listeners, our local affiliate, AM 1320 Bot Radio Network, lowers its signal power at 445 until the end of the year, but you can still listen to Issues Etc. full power at issuesetc.org. Old theology, new technology, issuesetc.org. Listen to what you want, when you want, Issues Etc.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Major pro-life victories reward months of work.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
Thanks to prayer, support, and general dissatisfaction with the state of things in Washington, advocates for life made considerable gains in last month's election. Among many victories, we filled the void of a pro-life woman's voice in the U.S. Senate with the election of Kelly Ayotte from New Hampshire, and elected five new pro-life women to the House of Representatives, increasing the number of pro-life women in the House by 60%. And many who caved on abortion funding and health care reform learned that votes have consequences when they lost their seat to a pro-life opponent.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. For more about our work to mobilize and advance pro-life women in politics, visit our website at sba-list.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. We're talking about Freemasonry. Dr. Alvin Schmidt is our guest. I'm Todd Wilkin. Dr. Schmidt, before we get to some of our listeners' questions here, a couple more from me. I raised it before the break. Some would say, look, 20, 30, maybe even 50 years ago, when all these organizations were more highly populated, including Freemasonry, maybe it should have been the doctrinal issues raised by Freemasonry should have been a concern for Christians. But these are dying organizations, and there's no real reason for Christians to be concerned today. What's your response to that?
Well, first of all, I didn't hear much of it. It was very silent what you read, and then it clicked in and came louder, the last few words. Could you maybe repeat it, please?
Yes. The people would argue that Freemasonry, along with so many other groups, is simply a dying organization, that Christians are wasting their time worrying about its doctrinal concerns, seeing that it probably won't be with us too much longer.
Well, it's true that they're a dying organization. That is very much true, but whether the next thing follows or not. Let me just give you an illustration. In 1959, Freemasonry in the United States had reached its high point in membership. It had 4,103,000. Now, for example, in 2009, its membership was down to 1,404,000, a decline of 67% from 1959. And that same pattern I might mention just incidentally is true for most other fraternal organizations. However, just because it's a dying organization doesn't mean that we as Christians may ignore it, because there are still many members who ignorantly joined this organization. And when they join this organization, they're joining an organization that is totally deistic and does not mention the name of Christ or pray in the name of Christ. In fact, that is very un-Masonic to do so. So we still have to be alert and aware that while it's a dying organization, it's by no means extinct.
Okay. Some questions from our listeners, beginning with Jim in Morton, Illinois. He asks simply, what makes Freemasonry a religion?
Well, that's a big question. There are some Masons that say it's a religion, and there are some that will argue it is not. They say we have religious elements in our rituals and the like, but that does not make us a religion. And so you can argue both ways, and we, as in the Synod, as I have read and studied it over the years, have never exactly quite said it's a religion, but we have been opposed to the religious teachings that Freemasonry does in its lodge meetings, and beginning with its oaths and beginning with a number of the other things that they teach in terms of its various symbols and the like. So whether it's a religion or not a religion, I think you can argue both ways, equally valid, and I don't know if any side can ever win. But that's really not the question. The question is that they do teach religious teachings that are contrary to Christianity.
All right, Michael in Kansas says, what's the difference between Freemasons and other community groups such as Lions, Knights of Columbus, American Legion, Auxiliary? You mentioned some others. Go over that again, if you would, Dr. Schmidt.
Yeah, well, the service organizations, as we often call them, the Rotaries and the Lions Club and the Kiwanis Club, are organizations that consist of business and professional people for the most part. I myself happen to belong to the Rotary. And basically the function there is to do community or altruistic work. They collect funds by means of dues, by means of other events that they put on. For example, we here in Jacksonville, Illinois, sponsor the 4th of July parade and things of that nature whereby we collect money. We run a Ferris wheel where we charge people, and then the money that we collect is given to various charities. For example, I was on the board of directors for a couple of years. Individuals in the community, various charity organizations, organizations that are dependent upon charity income, appeal to the Kiwanis, the Rotary, the Lions Club for funds. And then the board of directors makes decision in terms of how much money they get given the money that each of these organizations have in their coffers. And then each organization often, like the Lions, supports collects money for the National Institute of the Blind. Rotary does for polio, and that's why they are called a service organization. They provide a service to the community in terms of its various, primarily the charities that need money to be to support the indigenous people.
Chuck says this, I was one, that is, member of Freemasonry in my youth. Unitarianism comes to mind, but not sure that that's the right word. A belief that any God is acceptable, a belief that a God is required of Masons. I've been disassociated with that group since the mid-1980s. Your thoughts
there? Well, that's not too bad of a comparison. If any religion that is close to Masonry would be Unitarianism, because Unitarianism denies the Trinity. And the Masonry is a deistic organization, which also means they do not teach or uphold the Trinity. And in that sense, there's a similarity between Unitarianism and Freemasonry. But at the same time, you can't totally equate them because Unitarianism still proclaims to be a religion, doesn't make any apologies about it. It often calls itself a church, whereas Freemasonry usually doesn't claim to be a religion and doesn't claim to be a church. So there are those basic differences. But there are certain similarities there, to be sure.
Catherine in Arkansas says, are the modern-day Freemasons different than the Freemasons that some of our founding fathers were?
No, not really. If you look at the Freemasons at the time of George Washington, who was a Freemason, or for Benjamin Franklin, for example, or John Hancock, very little has changed. In fact, in the United States, you basically have 48 grand lodges. Most grand lodges are confined to state boundaries. In other words, you have the Grand Lodge of Missouri, the Grand Lodge of Illinois, the Grand Lodge of Washington State, for example. And some of the, within these organizations, there are a few differences, but there are none that are really of any real significance. And that was the case at the founding of the United States. Masonry came to the United States in the 1730s, even before, you know, we had the Declaration of Independence, and even sooner before we had the Constitution. So in another thing that Masonry prides itself about, that it's an ancient organization, it's really a part of its name, and therefore it isn't given to introducing a lot of social change or that makes it different from one century or even from one decade to another.
Now, am I wrong here, Dr. Schmidt, that Freemasonry as a philosophy, or if you will, as a kind of a pseudo-theology, actually claims to be ancient rather than simply going back to the founding of America or perhaps before that?
Yes, there's a lot of myth attached to it, and if you read, for example, the three-volume work by Mackey's Encyclopedia of Freemasonry, which has been out for many, many years, good scholars of Masonry will say, well, we're not as ancient as our mythology often makes it to be. Basically, Freemasonry, as we know it today, originated in 1717 in the Gridiron Tavern in London, England, where it basically switched from operative masonry meaning people who were actually masons building cathedrals and building bridges, and as that particular activity became less common, they began to attract individuals who were no longer bricklaying or stone-laying masons. They brought them in sort of as gentlemen masons. And then in time, the various symbols within Freemasonry took on symbolic or meaning. For example, some of the symbols of ancient operative masonry were the plum and the line and the trowel, for example. Now, the trowel now is symbolizing spreading the cement of brotherhood. The level symbolized to live on the level, upright and honest with other people, and especially your fellow masons. And so it became, in 1717, what is often referred to as speculative or symbolic masonry. The tools of operative masonry were no longer used to lay bricks or stones, but now were laid to build character. And so that's really the origin. Although there are mythological statements that ancient refers way back to the days of King Solomon building the temple, there's a lot of mythology attached to that. But that, and good Masonic scholars will never argue that is a point that's historically accurate. So it really begins with 1717.
A real quick question with only about less than a minute here from Brian in Greenville, Wisconsin, one of several. Do modern Freemasons revere the quote-unquote sacred feminine? 1 minute to answer, Dr. Schmidt.
No, not really. That is sometimes mentioned here and there, but that is not a part of their official literature. And I have read it, studied Masonry now for 40 years, and no, I would say no.
It's Wednesday afternoon, December the 1st. What kind of questions or comments do you have about the Masonic Lodge Freemasonry? Give us a call right here in the studio, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. You can go to our Facebook fan page where you can leave a question or comment right there, facebook.com/issuesETC, facebook.com/issuesETC. Dr. Alvin Schmidt is our guest. He's Professor Emeritus of Sociology at Illinois College. He's co-author of the Encyclopedic Dictionary of Cults, Sects, and World Religions. We're talking about the Masonic Lodge, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. Talkback at issuesetc.org. You can send us a tweet at issuesetc or leave your questions or comments on Freemasonry at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc. Tomorrow on Issues Etc., Apparent Contradictions in the Bible, our series continues. We're going to talk about the genealogies of Christ because some of those seem to disagree. They overlap a little bit, but they seem to disagree. And then also the list of the apostles, some apparent contradictions there as well. Dr. John Seleska of the Concordia Bible Institute will be our guest tomorrow on Issues Etc. More on Freemasonry with Dr. Alvin Schmidt. Stay tuned.
Would you like for us to post information about your congregation on the Find a Church page of our website? We'll add your church when it becomes part of the Issues, Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to donate $1,000 to Issues, Etc. Please consider adding the worldwide outreach of Issues, Etc. to your church's mission or advertising budget. Find out more about the Issues, Etc. 300 at issuesetc.org. Click support and publicize your congregation to the world.
The shepherds' hearts were full of fear. They shook right in their shoes. But then the angel called to them, "Fear not, I've got good news." Words from the Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for December, a children's book, The Shepherds Shook in Their Shoes. You can find out more about this great stocking stuffer at issuesetc.org. Or you can purchase The Shepherds Shook in Their Shoes and other great Christmas arch books for children by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues, Etc. 300. Augsburg Lutheran, Shawnee, Kansas. Peace Lutheran, Fresno, California. Trinity Lutheran, Casper, Wyoming. Memorial Lutheran, Houston, Texas. Trinity Lutheran, Gillette, Wyoming. Our Savior Lutheran, Ridgecrest, California. St. Mary's Lutheran, Des Moines, Iowa. Redeemer Lutheran, Kakabeka Falls, Ontario, Canada. St. Jacoby Lutheran, Shawano, Wisconsin. And St. John's Lutheran, North Prairie, Wisconsin. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues, Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues, Etc. 300, we'll publicize your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues, Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click support, the Issues, Etc. 300. Welcome back. I'm Todd Wilkin. 10 more minutes here on this Wednesday afternoon, December the 1st, with Dr. Alvin Schmidt talking about Masonic Lodge. One of our listeners, Brian in Greenville, Wisconsin, has some more questions. He says, are the Freemasons and Knights Templar connected historically?
Yes, they are. In fact, there are two ways, two routes, if you will, to become a Shriner. One is the Scottish Rite, which consists of 32 degrees, which includes the first 3 degrees, known as the Blue Lodge degrees. And there is the other rite called the York Rite, more accurately called the American Rite, which consists of 10 degrees, including the 3 Blue Lodge degrees. And so the Knights Templar is, in essence, the 10th degree in the American or the York Rite. And after that, you may then become a Shriner. Likewise, with the Scottish Rite, after you have attained a 32nd degree, you may become a Shriner. There are 33 degrees in the Scottish Rite, but the 33rd degree is simply an honorary degree and is not required in order for one to become a Shriner. Most men who are Shriners have taken the route of the Scottish Rite rather than the American Rite. So yes, to be a Knights Templar in the Masonic Lodge means you are a Mason. And one of the key differences is that the American or the York Rite uses a lot of Christian symbolism in its degrees, which the Scottish Rite does not do.
Brian also asks, Freemasons like to describe themselves not as a secret society, but as a society with secrets. What are some of the secrets that they are said to hold? For instance, he says, a 32nd Mason, 32nd degree Mason, told me that they have the Ark of the Covenant. What are the secrets that they hold so
well,
dearly?
Well, basically what they have, their secrets are the signs, the grips, and the passwords. And I might add, anything and everything that is secret, so-called, can be found in most good libraries. So it's largely a myth. I don't know how many Masons really believe that their secrets are really secrets. And I have, you know, discovered it many times with high-ranking Masons in different parts of the country when I've done my research, that when they talk to me alone, they don't make this pretense of having secrets, that they know I know what they know. And why? And how do I know it? Because if you do the take the time and the effort, you can even buy these the Masonic ritual that shows you the 3 degrees that they go through, or the 32 degrees in the Scottish Rite. It consists in two volumes. I have them both. And so, in a sense, there isn't really anything secret. It's a myth that many, I guess, Masons in ignorance believe or like to make others feel good about them being special. But in reality, there is nothing really secret that you cannot find out if you take the effort to do so.
Brian, what is their sacred geometry trying to communicate?
Well, you see, the two symbols that you mentioned at the outset that you often see on a sign when you approach a town, they have the square and the compass overlapping each other. These are architectural symbols that hark back to the days when Masons were still actually working Masons or operative masonry. As I said a little while ago, they have now taken the compass and the sign and the square. All of these now symbolize certain kinds of values that the person is supposed to learn and improve his character as a member of the lodge. And you often also see in the American situation, Canadian too, in the middle of the square and the compass on the sign, there is often a letter G, the capital letter G. Now, ordinary, that's not in European and England masonry, you don't find that. But you do find it in North America. And it's commonly argued in Masonic literature that this refers to the Grand Architect, another name for God, or a deistic name for God. And that's how most Masons see that G. There have been some critics that have said, and I don't think that that is a very valid argument, that the G stands for Gnosticism, the ancient Christian heresy. I can't really buy that argument as being very valid. I would say because of the goddessing of the Grand Architect, and that's what the G stands for those two architectural symbols, the square and the compasses.
Cheryl in Borger, Texas, what is the sheepskin apron all about?
Yeah, the sheepskin apron is white to symbolize purity and of a lamb. And so every Mason who has that as 3 degrees wears this particular apron in lodge meetings, or if they have a public ceremony, which they used to have very, very commonly, but not anymore, namely when a town built a new library or some other kind of building, Masons often like to participate in a cornerstone laying parade, because Masonry has greatly declined in numbers and in terms of attractiveness. Those are very, very rare phenomenon. But that was, again, where they would wear the white sheepskin apron. But basically, it symbolizes the purity of a lamb, which, again, to a Christian, is problematic, because we have a purity only in Jesus Christ, who has forgiven us our sins, not because of any works that we do as a good citizen would think of in terms of being a lodge member.
Stephen asks a question, and you'll probably need to explain what the position of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod, our church body is, vis-a-vis membership in the lodges. He says, how does one communicate the concerns of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod viewpoint to friends and family who are perhaps other Lutherans that are involved with the Masons?
Well, that's a good question, and it's not an easily one attained. You have to really, there's really no other way. You have to make the person who happens to be perhaps a member of the Masonic Lodge in a congregation, may even attend regularly and faithfully. You have to make that person conscious of the fact of what the Lodge teaches, namely salvation by works, and that one attains to the celestial lodge above, which is an actual terminology phrase that Masonry uses, by being a good and faithful Mason, not because of the merits of Christ's suffering, dying, and rising for the sins of mankind. And unless a person comes to the point of recognizing that there is a conflict between the emphasis of good works that get you to the celestial lodge over against the Christian teaching, by grace alone you are saved, not of works, lest any man should boast, Ephesians 2, 8, and 9. You will not get very far in terms of telling the person why Mason is wrong. But that's the starting point and the end point. But so many lay people often do not quite know this and grasp this. I've had number of experiences, pastors have often referred individuals to me in terms of counseling, a member that has been a Masonic lodge. I had one even where he was a Shriner when I lived in Fort Wayne teaching.
About 30 seconds here, Dr. Schmidt.
Yeah, well, that's basically it. You have to demonstrate to them how it conflicts with basic teachings like, for example, Ephesians 2, 8 and 9.
So I guess to put it in a nutshell, with only 30 seconds, finally, Marilyn in Wheaton, Illinois asks the bottom line question, is it possible for a Mason to be a Christian?
Oh, my goodness. It is possible if he doesn't understand Masonry, I suppose. But if he understands both, I would say no.
Dr. Alvin Schmidt is Professor Emeritus of Sociology at Illinois College. He's co-author of the Encyclopedic Dictionary of Cults, Sects, and World Religions. Dr. Schmidt, thank you very much for being our
guest. My pleasure. Thank you.
The Issues Etc. Book of the Month. I grew up with these things, folks. The Arch books. They're little books, thin books for children, beautifully illustrated, simply, this is what we ought to do with all our kids, simply telling the Bible stories. Christ-centered, cross-focused. And our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for December is a little bit of nostalgia for me. It's one of those Arch books, one of their Christmas ones called The Shepherds Shook in Their Shoes. It's but one of many Arch books that deal with the Christmas theme and the Christmas narratives from Concordia Publishing House. Find out more about this and the other Arch books for Christmas at our website, issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org, or call Concordia Publishing House and ask them about their Arch books for Christmas. Their toll-free number, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll continue our series on apparent contradictions in the Bible. We'll be talking with Dr. John Seleska of the Concordia Bible Institute about the lists of the apostles, which present some apparent contradictions, and the genealogies of Christ found in the New Testament. It can seem innocuous, and if one misunderstands what the Christian faith teaches, that we are saved by sheer grace, by the pure substitution of Christ's perfect obedience for our disobedience, by no works on our part whatsoever, one might be lured into the works righteousness of something like the Masonic Lodge. If one doesn't understand what the Masonic Lodge is actually teaching, that a man advances toward God and that he ultimately saves himself by his works, his virtue, and his character, then one could be lured in there. But one cannot, at the same time, hold these two contradictory beliefs that we are saved solely by Jesus Christ and what he has done for us, relying entirely upon the grace and mercy of God for our salvation and the forgiveness of our sins, and in complete contradiction that we are somehow saved also by our works. The two cannot mix. The two do not go together. I'm Todd Wilkin. Talk with you again tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.